are the ancients of the days and you.
This is WCNO Palm City, the good news station.
Then the preacher preaches, and then he prays, you know, gives an altar call, he prays, and when he's praying, I'm going to be in the wind, you know.
I get out of here. I know how the system works.
Yeah, because I didn't want to go, you know, I didn't want to go through an altar call and reject the Lord.
Yeah.
Not realizing my whole life was rejecting the Lord, not just that one incident, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, I mean, they're singing songs, the choir is singing, and the church, it's Pentecostal church, they start getting a little wild, you know.
Yeah.
And they're praising the Lord and raising their arms, you know, and so forth. And all of a sudden, the preacher gets up and walks to the pulpit and says, this altar's open right now. I said, no, he's fooled me. They pulled one on me, you know. And I'm thinking, and the Lord's saying, you know, you need to come. I said, Lord, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't live like these people, you know. But next, I was headed to the altar. And I knelt down there, and I said, Lord, you know, there's certain things I can do and certain things I can't, you know. And I was negotiating, you know. I said, I can't quit this, but I'll quit that. And so all of a sudden, it felt like, you know, I'm not much of a computer guy, but when they came out with those computers with a floppy disk, it's like they took that disk out and put it in another one.
Really?
Oh, I knew when I stood up from that altar, I'd never go back to it. I knew I was saved. I knew that I would never drink again. And I haven't. I walked away. I went to the sit down by Mavis and said, you don't have to go down there, but that's where it's happening. And people are still going crazy, you know, because they caught a big fish, you know, because they all knew about me. I was in my community, you know, so he knew who I was.
You don't have to go down there, but that's where it's happening.
Yeah, she went down there and she got saved too. And she was a Baptist Methodist. But wasn't going to church. I didn't want her to go to church. I said, you ain't going to church and bring that stuff home to me. You know, yeah. And so.
So you knew you were instantaneously converted, totally.
Yeah.
New disc.
Yeah. It doesn't work that way for everybody, apparently, you know, but with me it did. I never looked back. I mean, I was started being in church all the time. Then we almost got divorced because I wanted to be there an hour before church started. and she said, well, my God, we don't have to be there that early. I said, I want to be there. And so I said, are you crazy?
You found the real thing and you wanted
crazy? I mean, you didn't want me to go to the bar. Now you don't want me to go to church? You ought to be camping out down there. So we started going to church all the time. But the day, one of the important part of it was that day when I was sitting in church after she came back and sat down, and they wanted to preach. I have no idea what he preached that day. But I said to her, I said, you know, we're trying to have kids. We'd been married at that point almost 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
We'd been to the doctors and been tested, and they said, there's no reason why you can't have kids, you know. But, you know, and so, but she wasn't getting pregnant. And so that day I said to her, because I took Bible in high school as an elective, because it was easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I memorized all kinds of scriptures, you know, and we'd get out there, and these guys would say, preach. And I'd get down to preach, you know, and quote these scriptures, you know, we'd laugh, you know, that's the funniest thing in the world. No, I mean, it wasn't funny when I became a preacher, a real preacher, you know. And so I said, you know, I think we can have children now because the Bible says, and I hadn't read a Bible in 10 years.
Yeah.
I said, it says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these other things will be added unto you. And it's right there in the Bible, you know. And so that day, from that day till the time Paul was born, was
9 months.
9 months and one day.
You're kidding.
Nope. And we never had any more children. Just him. I mean, to me, that was the Lord putting an accent on it and saying, see, I did this.
Wow. 9 months and one day from that day.
Yep.
You got a friend up in heavenly places, don't you?
March 16th, 1969 is when I got saved. He was born that same year, December the 17th.
Amazing. That's just amazing. I tell you what, let's take a little break. Then when we come back, we're talking with Pastor Buddy Tipton. I've known him for almost 30 years now.
Yeah.
He ran his church for how many years? 46 years. And when we come back, he goes forth, he gets saved. Then, I mean, radically, he says it's like a floppy disk. Another disk was put in the computer. He's totally wiped clean, comes back to his seat, and knows that there's a power greater than himself that has saved him from his addiction to alcohol, etc. How did he become a preacher and influence so many lives around the world? We'll find out when we return. This is the Mayor of the Airwaves. Who loves you, baby? Somebody up above, far greater than I assure you. We continue the story of Pastor Buddy Tipton, a reverend for 46 years in Vero Beach, Florida. He accidentally killed his cousin, didn't know the gun was loaded or forgotten that he had loaded it. Anyway, so he wears that on his shoulders. He ends up being addicted to alcohol, goes into the Navy, gets kicked out of the Navy, and anyway, has one daughter out of wedlock and leaves that girl and the daughter. By the way, did you ever reconcile with your daughter?
I did. As a matter of fact, she was in high school, graduated from high school before I actually ever spoke to her. And, I began to get such conviction. Because by then I was pastoring a church, counseling people, and I counseled people that had done the same thing I'd done. So it was weighing heavy on me.
Yeah. I didn't want to be a hypocrite.
No, and so I said, you know, what should I do about this, you know? And so I got a hold of her mother, talked to her, and I said, you know, what should I do? And she said, oh, I think she'd want to talk to you. I said, she does? Oh, my God, it scared me to death, you know.
Where was she living at the time? California still?
Santa Barbara. Well,
Santa Barbara. That's a beautiful town.
Oh,
my favorite city in California.
Oh, it is great.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Good Mexican food.
Yep.
People that can't even speak English.
And I talked to her on the phone, and she said, yeah, I'd love to see you. And I said, okay. And so I flew to California, and met with her mother and her. And her mother went to church that Sunday in a, I'm trying to think, it was one of those independent churches that started a house group. It was a house church. Yeah. And I went to church with them, you know, and she'd become a Christian, been saved. Yeah.
That's great.
And the story goes on, you know, so great.
Yeah.
But her daughter, you know, she's been there, but she didn't really take it, you know. Mm-hmm. But we got along. I spent a week there, you know, and it was just great. And, of course, we've been like that ever since.
Oh, you are? You still don't talk
to her? Oh, yeah. We talk to each other on the phone and, you know, birthdays and so forth. I take care of her. And we've been out there. Mavis and I have been out there and stayed with her, you know. And she's married, you know. I married a guy from England, but not my fault. But anyway.
Hey, good fish and chips, man.
Yeah, he talks funny. But he thinks I talk funny. But great.
I'd like to see the two of you together.
I need a translator.
Well, that's a wonderful story of reconciliation. But how did you become a pastor?
All right. So after I got saved, you know, on which I, you know, repented of my sins, the Lord came into my life, I began to feel like, you know, I'd love to be a pastor, you know, but I didn't have the call. You know, I mean, from what I understood about it, the Lord calls you, and I just didn't feel that, but I wanted to. And everybody come around and said, you're going to be a pastor. You're going to be a pastor. Everybody, you know, I said, yeah, but I ain't called, you know.
So you're waiting for the phone to ring.
Yeah. Well, I went into my house, and I said, I'm going to fast and pray until I get an answer. And I stayed there. We had people over for dinner one night, and they had spaghetti and meatballs. I'll never forget it. And I sat there and drank water and while they ate. I was going to stick with it. And on Friday afternoon, about 2 o'clock, I was praying, and all of a sudden, it's like that disc again came in and says, you're going to be a pastor. And so I started as you know.
Was it an audible voice? Was it an unction?
Audible voice couldn't have been any stronger. I mean, in fact, I kind of looked around, you know, to see who was talking, you know, but it was the Lord just spoke to me.
Really?
Yeah. There's probably 5 times in my life that it was that strong that I felt like, you know, he actually spoke.
Yeah.
But that day, I started preparing, you know, go to Bible college. I was a Boilermaker, and so I traveled.
What's a Boilermaker?
A Boilermaker, you know, the power plant over here that's now defunct.
Yeah.
You know, they have a big, what they call a steam drum up top. And the pipes, you know, they're so big around, and they go all the way down to the bottom. Well, there's steam inside those, and that steam makes the turbine turn, you know, that produces electricity. And so we'd build those. And I was more on the outside, you know, building the structure.
Yeah.
And I worked with iron workers doing that. They needed connectors. Connectors, one up top, you know. And they couldn't get them. Their own guys wouldn't do it because at the paper mill there in Panama City, the black liquor, which is the pine trees, when they get the stuff out, they call it black liquor, the juice that comes out of there. and it was black, and it would rain down on the iron all night long. And when they get up there, you put your foot on it, it's so slippery. And so the connectors quit and went somewhere else. It was very dangerous. And so I went and asked for a job, and they said, "You a connector?" I said, "I can do it." "You ever done it?" "Oh, yeah." Never had, but they said okay, and they sent me out on a job, and I hopped on a headache ball on a crane. You know, the ball has a hook on it. I stepped on that thing, and they set me up there 120 feet in the air, and I stepped off on it, and it was just woo. I said, "Why'd they quit?" And so I sat down on it, and it has like acid in it, and it burns the back of your legs if you sit down and get wet.
Whoa.
And so they would send us iron, we'd connect it, and you have to run out there or walk out there and get that choker off of it. You know, they set it up there with so the crane can go back and get more. And I'd never done it, but I did it, and I loved it. Oh, I wasn't afraid of heights or nothing, you know.
Yeah.
And so not everybody can do that, you know. And it has nothing to do with how great you are. It's just some people's got a fear of heights, and, man, they just get dizzy. And so... So I became the number one connector. I mean, I loved it.
And, wow.
And I'd climb those beams, you know, those columns. You know, you put your foot in the web up and climb right up. You got 40 pounds of bolts and 8-pound hammer and spud wrenches and everything on you, and which helps hold you down when you're walking, and because the wind up a couple hundred feet up is blowing all the time.
Yeah.
And so you're walking in this crosswind, and it just helps to station you on the iron.
You know, you probably got to meet my stepdad, Benjamin Robert Collins. He's no longer alive. Probably brought him to your church way back when I first came to town.
Yeah.
And he'd been in the Steelworkers Union, you know?
Yeah.
He quit because too many guys were falling down into the center where they're building this big museum in Albany, New York. And he came home looking like a ghost one day. It was about the third time he did. He said, "I can't go back. Yeah. I can't see these men die." Because then they just pour the concrete in on top of them. They can't go retrieve them.
Yeah, I took a guy's place that had fallen, and they sent me up there to take his place.
And he was dead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you saw that happen with frequency.
Yeah. It didn't happen as much then as it did probably when your dad was there, but it was still happening. You know, that was in the, you know, 60, late 60s and early 70s. And so, it was a very dangerous job. Almost every day you had a close call.
Wow. Well, there seems to be an attraction. God seems to be attracted to the courageous. He says in the book of Revelation, he has no joy in the timid soul. I mean, even Pat Robertson was a boxer.
Yeah.
And were you a boxer, too?
No, I got beat up a lot. Might as well have been, but I was always drunk. Well, I thought I was a boxer then.
Okay, let's go back to you becoming a pastor, though. So you decide you're going to fast and pray until you get an answer from God.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m. 7 a.m. or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer, and this is a new day.
We'd like to thank Pleens Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie for sponsoring It's a New Day. We'd also like to thank Center for Advanced Eye Care, Dr. Mallon, Center for Advanced Eye Care with offices in Fort Pierce and in Vero Beach. Thank you for supporting us.
To you, Lord, I give all.